Today, our lesson is on the environment. And if we remember the whole quarterly is about health and healing. So my question, first off, is how does the environment reveal God? How do you think the environment reveals God? Some of you looking like me, that's a stupid question. tell me how you think it reveals God. Go ahead.
God is very creative.
Very creative.
That sounds like a simple statement. Mm-hmm. But if you look at detail in nature, you know, the birds are all have different ways of feeding themselves, of reproducing, of flying, where they live, and everything. And just looking at their feathers, and the fish in the sea, there's just so much tiny detail. He put lots of thought, I believe, in this world.
Okay, so
creation.
So to you, the environment reflects God's creativity.
Yes, the fact that and the perfectness of His nature.
Okay.
The environment recreates itself. I mean, what I'm saying is there's a give and a take that He set in motion. That if it weren't for the man's, intervention. I mean, if man didn't pollute it along the way, it would be a perfect environment. But we.
So you think it'd be a perfect environment if we just lived off the grid and didn't?
Well, no. The sin is here. And so in that way, it isn't. But all I'm saying is it was set up to be
balanced.
Yeah, okay, balanced. And we have unbalanced. Man has unbalanced it.
Okay.
When I think of balance, I was thinking of that, what she was saying. And I think of, like, the different cycles, the water cycle, the carbon cycle, you know, trees produce oxygen, which is what we need to breathe. We produce carbon dioxide, which is what trees need, you know, plants need. And so there's a balance and such a there's a perfection in it that I think shows God.
Okay. Who else? What these are good ideas. How do you think it reveals God?
I think it reveals His heart towards us.
His heart toward us. Oh, I like that word. Go ahead.
Yes. Because really we don't necessarily, I mean, the things that He created were for our best good.
Uh-huh.
He could have made us so that we didn't need to breathe the air and enjoy, and the birds and the trees, so forth and so on. But He gave us those things because He knew they would bring us enjoyment in life.
Okay.
He just shows His heart towards us.
His heart, okay.
Along with what Robbie's saying, we're connected. It's like the trees need what we have and we need what the trees have. So
mm-hmm.
We're connected to the environment.
Okay, so there's a connection. Who else? How the rest of you think that the environment reveals God? I thought someone was going to say something over there.
No, it's just the majesty of it. I look at the rainbow or the sunset, and I just become ecstatic. It's just personal, you know. Mm-hmm. And my little granddaughters were with me in the car one time, and I was waxing enthusiastic. And one of them said, "Mimi, you sure do like rainbows and sunsets, don't you?"
Yeah,
I sure do.
Go ahead.
I think for me, the thing about our environment is that's so amazing about God is how He built into not just our bodies, but the environment, this compensation mechanism.
Okay.
That He, in His wisdom, knew what we would need. And He knew that we would pollute the environment. And yet there's this compensation that goes on. And I think that when we take God out of that and we as man say, well, we're doing this, like, wait a minute, really? I don't think so. And our bodies have an amazing ability to adapt to different environments, whether it's the high altitude, whether it's the tropics, whatever it is, we have an ability to adapt to that. But the environment, God created it in a way that it could also adapt.
Okay.
To what is... what happens, and it doesn't mean we don't have an impact, and that's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I'm saying that I think too many times we kind of have this fatalistic view, and it's like, that's not really accurate, that God has designed us in our world to have these mechanisms that it's amazing how many of them they are.
Okay, so there's a wonderment of how God created the mechanisms for things to adapt. How would the survival of the fittest apply in our understanding of the environment? How's that tell us about God?
You know, Roger, I took off on what was presented last week on this, the messages from water. And lo and behold, I went to his site. And he had a man had a thought about the earthquake in Haiti. And as far as, you know, I don't know if it's reality or what, but over in Haiti, they have a lot of unemployment, a lot of, you know, anger and everything else like this. And he says, I'm not a person that knows all of this stuff here, but since thought affects water, he said, could their thought affect the earthquake that they've had, you know? And I think that just to know that even our thoughts can affect that water, whether it freezes in a beautiful symmetrical, you know, shape or not, I think that we need to become more aware of who we are and our effect upon the environment and its effect upon us and what we do.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing. The challenge of that is sometimes we get that importance, and that's just another way to become our own little G-O-D. And that's a real challenging thing. Obviously, there's a recognition that what we do, how we think, affects us and affects our environment. But there's a line where that becomes, wow, look at who we are. And that's a real challenging thing. You know, you think about going back to the water cycle, like Rob talked about last week. The water cycle is basically, as he shared about, the fact that we're drinking the same water that Jesus drank. We're drinking the same water that Abraham drank, which is a fact. But you know what I was stimulated by that to think about is, God has put us in this closed system. He's put us in this closed system. Now, I don't know, haven't studied, so I can't tell you, but I'm not sure the rest of the universe is in a closed system. But to me, God has put us in a closed system because He knows the effect evil has and how it can pollute. And we need, at this point, to be in a closed system. We need to be in a system where we're not able to go beyond that, because until the recognition of His character is truly known by those that are going to be in heaven, there's always that potential of that breaking, that polluting the world. So let's go back to the environment here. How does the survival of the fittest reveal about God?
I think it's contrary.
You think it's contrary to God? Okay, good.
Survival of the fittest suggests that a person or animal or something, as they live and progress, etc., that their imperfections somehow become perfections, and that's how they survive. But as we know, God, the way that we are made as human beings, we started off as perfect, and now we are imperfect.
Come on in.
God, in His grace, allows us to survive for however long on this earth. And He has made a way for us to have eternity if
you
choose to accept
it.
So it's contrary.
You think it's contrary. How about the rest of you?
Well, I've got that age now where I've created my own environment out of my home, and my bird feeders and my water places, and I watch the birds and all. And last year we had this nice red-bellied woodpecker, and it's got a big red head. It looks like a red head. Pecked this hole in that tree, and he got it perfect. And then these starlets came in and killed one of them inside there. Survival of the fittest. Well, we say that that's nature's way.
That's nature's way.
We watched last night while a pretty white crowned sparrows came and ate along with a redbird with a special feeder. If anybody's interested, I got a good one. And it attracts all the different birds. About sundown, my wife and I sitting in here, come this old possum just barely able to get over there to the water. Drank and drank. We've never seen the old possum before. You could tell it was on its death row.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out to it, and all it could do was open its mouth. So I thought he crawled over under one of my little places. I said, well, I'm going to go get that possum out before he's dead. But I didn't have to. This morning he was laying by the water.
Dead.
Got him by the tail, and I took him off. We had about 2 acres of put in a pipeline, and I put it out there. You know, and I look at that environment I'm in, and, you know, we humans are the same way. We can. I wanted to take and shoot that blackbird. I bought a gun for
mm-hmm.
it. I was going to destroy that blackbird. Because
mm-hmm.
he destroyed that.
He was messing river. Your environment up.
So we might live in an environment where there is an imperfect world.
Mm-hmm.
But we as human beings still have certain responses we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just take things our own head. And I tell you, the blackbirds are back there this year and they're raising some young ones.
I think that survival of the fittest came about after fall.
Okay.
I don't think it was in God's design. In Adam and Eve, in the Garden of Eden, that there would be that kind of environment.
Okay.
I think in God's wisdom, understanding that man is going to, just like he gave provisions to eat certain meats after the flood, and he gave certain instructions throughout the, you know, throughout the walk with the Israelites and all the way that he interacted. I think that in a way, that's what he's done with nature as well when he creates a survival mode, is that it doesn't create. I think he just sort of knows that there's a, that it permits a certain cycle to take place that is, you know, almost purging or cleansing.
So how does that reveal God then?
Well, I think it reveals God in how he wants to, you know, I think he's just like he's permit. I think he's permitting us to go through the pain of sin at some point in time. I think that survival of the fittest is a lesson to be learned about his grace, his nature, but it's also it's more revealing about sin.
Okay. Go ahead.
Roger, survival of the fittest, something marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
God revealed him to the prophet Isaiah what he wanted it to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah 1.
So tell us what that was.
Well, I'll give you some extra.
Okay.
It says, the wolf shall also dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid and the calf, and the young lion and the fatling together. And a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw.
Okay.
That's what God wants it to be like. That's not survival.
Right, right. So then, Rick, you brought out, and you're echoing that God's desire was not for this to be this way. For not one bird to kill another so it can get there and find it to live in a home.
You know, it's amazing that death is not the worst thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a world of sin where we forget that death is not the worst thing.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, that is the most humane thing. And I see, because, yes, survival of the fittest, that term comes from, but in reality, we see this.
Mm-hmm.
If a baby is genetically too deformed, it doesn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it past 12 weeks or 14
mm-hmm.
weeks in utero, and the mother will, you know, lose the baby. We see this in nature all the time, that if animals are deformed enough, they don't, and to me, that is God's grace.
Okay.
That he does not put his creatures through the torture. I mean, I think of what it would be like to try to live, and a lot of people do, because now we have the technology to bring them, and how excruciating that is. And I think, you know what? It's a compensation mechanism that God in his really divine providence realized that, you know what? There is another world. And I don't believe, you know, obviously we're not going to go to plants and animals and apply that, but it's human. When things are not perfect, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because we are going to live for another time.
Right.
I look at my father, who is progressing in his cancer, and I think it would be torture for him to live forever the way he is right now.
Absolutely.
That there will come a time when it's right for him to go. And that's not an unloving God. That's not a God that is a God that says, you know what, it's okay. You don't live for now. You live for another world.
Absolutely. Do we have any boaters in the midst? Anybody that knows about lakes? Anybody know the Great Salvinia? You know what that is? It's a plant that grows in water.
Hey, so
tell me about it. Tell me what you know about it.
Well, I just know that it's one of those plants that once it gets started in a lake, it just sucks up everything. It becomes dominant, and other plants and animals can't survive in it. You certainly can't boat fish.
And how it does that is it blocks the sunlight, and it sucks all the oxygen out of the water. So all the fish, and it in 2 weeks it doubles itself. And it's something that started in Brazil, but then it was moved to Australia. They moved it because they thought it was a pretty flower, but now it's found in lakes in Texas, in Florida. And the only thing that we know how to get rid of it is to physically remove it. They're working feverishly on trying to find. Their one thing was weevils. They discovered a weevil that maybe will eat it. But they're working feverishly because these will literally take over lakes. They will just destroy. Go ahead.
You know, this is the change of the subject there. I'm sorry, but you think survival of the fittest? Sometimes we, in a society, we assume that that's the right way to do things, and we adopt that to our Christian experience also, so we become more good and more fit and all this stuff in our own characters, building our own self up as opposed to relying on God. So we think that's the way to survive as a Christian. And it turns around that way. We just adopt that principle of the weak fall and the strong survive. So therefore, we're going to pull ourselves up as Christians.
Well, and that's a little of the danger of what we're talking about with the positive thoughts and the effect. I think that almost like, oh, I'm getting really becoming a better Christian now. I'm a more blah, blah, blah Christian, whatever those words are, you know. But the reality is we have to put it all in a whole perspective and say, what does this tell us about God? And how he created us.
God is in control of the environment. God is in control of lives. Maybe in some kind of a distant fashion at times, you know, where he set it in motion, but he still has a hand over everything.
Absolutely.
And that, of course, so it can't be just survival of the fittest.
Right. We were in Cattle Lake. I was in Cattle Lake with a group of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders this last week. And they were talking about this plant, the Great Salvinia. And I thought, what a perfect analogy of the devil. He comes in there and he wants to suck all the oxygen. And it has a beautiful flower. And he wants to block the sunlight. And you think, oh, isn't that look pretty? Isn't that look nice? Wow, that's a beautiful flower plant out there. But what it's doing is sucking the very life out of that lake, out of that. And now that we have knowledge of it, it's not so pretty. It's not so beautiful. It's frightening to the lake goers and people that are in work with on these lakes because they know what this has. They know the potential.
Ironically, contrary to that, what do they call earthquakes? Tornadoes and hurricanes. Acts of God.
Acts of God. Yeah, that's a great acts of God. I had some other people had their hands up.
I was just reflecting on some of the comments and thinking how much that term, survival of the fittest, is a misnomer. Because God causes, it is really his grace that we live and move and have our being, and he causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. So when we talk about survival of the fittest, to me it misrepresents who God is. He is fair and just. And if that were the case, then there is no fairness or equity in
quote unquote, the strong surviving.
Right. Well, I think that I go back to this. We've got to continue to look at, we can all talk about how a beautiful flower reflects God or the springtime, but if you look at the whole thing, it reflects God. And his ability, I liked your words, adapting, his ability to compensate and allow things to play out its course. All in this contained environment. He's quarantined this world. He said, okay, this is where it needs to be the great debate is taking place. We're going to allow this to take place here. And in that, all kinds of things take place. The great Salvinia takes over at times. We do all kinds of things. Go ahead.
I think the example of the great Salvinia or kudzu or any of these other things, they go out of control because humans have intervened. They have taken, you know, like the kudzu was also thought of as a pretty plant. They would grow it in gardens, and here all through the South, it's taking over hillsides and covers trees and kills trees and all that kind of thing. We have other little, you know, fish that takes over a lake or different things like that. And it shows how much we have a part in changing or maintaining what God has created. And that's he created us and said, here's this garden to take care of. And, we have a large part of these different things going on, and it shows also, I think, the complexity of our environment, that we may think, you know, oh, well, this is pretty, or this is, you know, this is going to kill this, or this is going to do this, and we try to manipulate our environment in different ways and not realize down the road the different things that are going to happen when God set it up to be able to, you know, continue to go on.
Yeah, we do manipulate our environment. The fact that we're sitting in here air conditioning, the fact that we have lights and a fan moving, we continually are working to have some control of our environment, you know, and it's fascinating to see how that is, and many of it has added to the benefit of our lives. You know, many of it has continued life. The challenge is, it's all recognizing that God is allowing this, and this is his plan that we have the ability to play out this conflict. Go ahead, you want to say something?
I have to admit I didn't study the lesson this week.
Oh, no.
So I don't know if it got into this.
Did you have to study in order to talk?
No, I'm talking. But what did God mean when he said that he gave man dominion over the earth at creation?
I don't know. What do you think it means?
Well, in general terms, all my life, I felt like that it was given to us to care for, you know, to use, mm-hmm. you know, for our benefit, and, you know, just nice little terms like mm-hmm. that. But the reason I bring this up is because I've been in Florida this last week, and there's a major movement in my brother's church there that I don't fully understand and really can't explain. But there are some in the church who feel like that gives man much greater power than I think maybe we have uh-huh. in relationship to prayer and things like that. So I'm just wondering what others think about it. I mean, I have a very childish view of it, uh-huh. not real theology.
I think that God's really... He's interested in us. And I know that he created all the things that we find to be so lovely. But I think when it comes to redeeming people in the kingdom and returning us to a perfect nature, that there's nothing here on earth that he's going to keep besides us. And I just believe that. And I don't know that, you know, there may be wonderful creations in the same fashion that they are now. But I learned in an early age that the survival of the fittest idea, when you're talking about, you remember when we were kids, this is my brother, by the way, we went to my older brother's farm, and they were feeding. And on the feet, when we would feed, my oldest brother, who was a farmer, said, you've got to kick some of these out, and we've got to destroy some of these chickens that have deformed beaks, because the other ones they're not going to be fed enough to be able to sell, you know, for the. And I couldn't understand that. Well, I watched him do this a couple times, and he said, now Ricky, you know, and I was 12, and he said, you got to take this, and you know, this is how you wring a chicken's neck, and I was traumatized by it. But now, I didn't want to let him down, nor did I want to let you or Randy down. And so the final was almost feeding time was almost over, and I wanted to, you know, prove that I could do this. And I grabbed one of those deformed chickens, grabbed its little head, and I turned my head like this, and I tried to spin it as fast as I could to get this over with. And that poor little thing just went to flying, and I had this little head in my hand. I thought, oh, my goodness, and it traumatized me to this day.
At least you didn't chicken.
Like, you know, as much as that traumatized me and everything, I said, what traumatizes me more, what traumatizes God is that if he somehow loses me, you know, as one of his own. And that's the difference to me between God's interest in us as his children and God, you know, God's interest in how he has created, you know, the rest of the creation for man. And when I think of survival of the fittest, I only think of it in terms of the creations, you know, the animal kingdom and so forth. I don't necessarily equate that to how what he mentioned as Darwinism. You know, I think that's there for a reason. But I, even though I was traumatized, I grew up believing that my life, you know, would belong to God. And this little chicken, as much as it was, you know, created to be a chicken, God was interested in me.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to keep remembering. Go ahead.
You know, there's an insidious lie that is being propagated for a very long time, really since the beginning of time, that all of the created objects are the same, and they're not. Your garden does not have the ability to think. Your animals don't have the ability to process emotions. And when you talk about dominance over our environment, God created us in a way to be able to manipulate. None of the rest of the created beings have those abilities. And that cognitive ability, there is a dominion that man has over his environment that no other created being. But if you listen to what is said, there's a lot of lies about the fact that the environment is Mother Nature, that I think that we have to be very, very careful, because you see this even creeping into Christianity, and it's like, wait a minute.
Well, and that's what the lesson kind of talked about. What is our responsibility as a Christian to the environment? And they talked about the earth and how do we recycle. And I guess my question in that is, I'm not sure, what does it matter, you think, whether you're Christian and you recycle or non-Christian recycle, as far as, I mean, I guess, does it affect Christianity?
It may not necessarily, but I think back to the question of dominion, why did God give us dominion? It wasn't just, for us to take care of animals per se. I think ultimately it is so that we can develop his character, so that we can have the same compassion and caring and consideration that he has for us.
Absolutely.
That's the whole purpose of it, that we might become like him. Mm-hmm.
Well, and as the pastor spoke in the sermon this morning, you know, when you have a 3 or 4 year old child that comes up to you and says, I want to help you cook, and that child gets up there to help you cook, are they helping?
No.
Not really. You're going to have to clean up more. It's going to take longer. But you want to be a part, you want that child to feel part of that process. I think that's what God is doing with each of us. He wants us to realize the responsibility and the process of how do we care for our environment? How do we care for and understand the balance of life? And I guess that to me is the question is, how does this help us and what does it reveal to us about God? And I think that's an important thing. There's a statement here in Desire of Ages talks about after Jesus rose again. They saw, this is the disciples, they saw the shroud and the napkin, but they did not find the Lord. Holy. Let me see. Oh, the grave cloths were not thrown heedlessly aside, but carefully folded, each in its place by itself. John, it was Christ himself who had placed those grave clothes with such care. When the mighty angel came down to the tomb, he was joined by another who, with his company, had been keeping guard over the Lord's body. As the angel from heaven rolled away the stone, the other entered the tomb and unbound the wrappings from the body of Jesus. But it was the Savior's hand that folded each and laid it in its place. In his sight, who guides alike the star and the atom, there is nothing unimportant. Order and perfection are seen in all of his work. And that little simple statement, as I read it, I thought, that speaks about who God is, who Jesus is. Order and perfection. And how even the grave clothes were neatly folded. And Ellen White says Jesus himself folded those clothes. Jesus created the order. And this is what those that came to the tomb saw when they came in there. And that just speaks volumes about God in our world, in our environment. He's created this order and this perfection that now he allows to become all kinds of different things occur. You know, I think there's tremendous compensation. And to me, that just speaks volumes of God. This wasn't God's original plan for us. It wasn't his original plan, but he knows how to adjust. He knows how to adapt. He knows how to say, wow, I think this is a way we can make this work. Look at what he did with the children of Israel. Boy, you talk about adjusting and adjusting and adjusting. So much so, at one point he said, let's just start over. And Moses said, no God, this is not your character. That's not who you are. You would not be represented well in that. And I think, to me, that's what the environment reflects about us as God. It reflects how God continually is to adjust. Think about it in your own life, how he's adjusted and come.
I'll back it up with the text.
Okay.
In the lesson, in Genesis 1:26, it speaks about how God then said, let us make the beings look like us and can reflect our thinking and personality. And that's an awesome responsibility when you think about it. It says, let's give them the responsibility of ruling over the fish, the birds, and the animals. But to look like us, reflect our thinking and our personality. And this is God speaking to his Son. Well, that's a tremendous call of stewardship.
Absolutely.
To that which we have been given, not only the environment, the earth, but to our fellow man.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did this change after sin?
Did the...
You know, when he said, let them have dominion over the fish and over the sea, that was before sin. What happened after sin? This verse is literally after sin.
What do you think?
That's my question.
I know. What do you think?
I don't believe so. I don't think it's literal.
Okay.
Because I'm afraid of animals. I'm afraid of snakes. If I have dominion, I would not be afraid. Mm-hmm. You know, tigers going to woods, I would not be afraid of that.
But you have to remember, the dominion may not be in the sense that, I'm not real fond of snakes either. But we have created ways to make sure we have control. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things, but we do know after the fall of Adam and Eve, the earth was totally different. You know, as the lesson talks about, thistles, things used to grow that never were grew before. There were all kinds of changes. Now had to plow the land, now had to work the land, toil. None of that was part of it. What was their first recognition that they had broken the relationship with Jesus, with God. They were naked. Before, they didn't know that. So to me, it just shows you how God has continually worked and made adjustments. And the first thing He did when He got them is, here, let's make your clothes for yourself. And you know, you think, well, why did they, what happened that I don't have anymore? That was what they were going to discover. That was going to be their process. And that's what we're all in the process of doing. Understanding, why is it that now we're having these adjustments, and we continue to. And there's all kinds of it. And I think it's real important that we recognize and echo what you were saying, that this death is not the ultimate thing to be afraid of. It's been not connected to God, not connected to Jesus Christ. That's what Jesus was the most distressed by, is that not knowing, not having that connection with His Father, not knowing if it was enough. So when we think about these kinds of things, I think we have to realize we have such a finite, we're in this closed system here. We're in a closed, finite world. And sometimes we look at things, and to me, things that seem such a tragedy may just be a part of a natural process that's to help us understand God. I was down at North Padre, and to see there in Port Aransas, there were some of the Hurricane Ike, and the water is, you know, 15 feet from the road now. There used to be sand dunes. There used to be a row of houses. And I was talking to one person about it, and she said, well, a lot of those houses kind of were dilapidated. I said, so it was a purging. So I guess you could call it that. Well, I'm sure if it was one of your property there, you wouldn't think of it as a purging. But these kinds of things to us become tragic because they represent shaking our world, shaking our environment. Death, it shakes our world, shakes our environment. Death of a loved one, death of a friend, death of whoever. These things, but they're not, they're the mean to help us understand our need for God. Understand where our hope really lies in. At the end of the great controversy, in the lesson they talked about the new earth. And I thought this was really wonderful. And the years of eternity as they roll will bring richer and still more glorious revelations of God and of Christ. As knowledge is progressive, so will love, reverence, and happiness increase. The more men learn of God, the greater be their admiration of His character. As Jesus opens before them the riches of redemption and the amazing achievement in the great controversy with Satan, the hearts of the ransomed thrill with more fervent devotion, and with more rapturous joy they sweep the harps of gold in 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of sounds of voices unite to swell the mighty chorus of praise. And every creature which is in heaven, and on earth, and under the earth, and such as in the sea, and all that are in them, heard I say, blessed and honor and glory and power be unto Him that sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb forever and ever. That was Revelation 5:13. The great controversy is ended. Sin and sinners are no more. The entire universe is clean. One pulse of harmony and gladness beats through the vast creation. From Him who created all, flow life and light and gladness throughout the realms of illimitable space. From the minutest atom to the greatest world, all things animate and inanimate in their unshadowed beauty and perfect joy declare that God is love. To me, that's an exciting thing to keep hold of. That this is going to be a place where all the universe resounds that God is love. That everything works in a harmonious balance. And in that balance, everything is anew. And that's the exciting thing that I think each of us in our lives can focus on, is how we can experience moments of that in this world. But what is it going to be like even 10 times like that? 1,000 times more? Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful we can come today and study about the environment. We recognize in all that You have done that You have adjusted and continue to love us and care for us. Your laws are unchangeable. and your love continues to reach for us. And I'm very grateful how you reached into my life and continue to love me and continue to find ways to show me how to become more understanding your character. Thank you as we leave today, and may all of us enjoy our Sabbath day. Amen.